Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. It's Herms, still without Tyler O this week, but we are now into part two of my NFL training camp storyline discussion with my good friend Jeff Crisco from Football Absurdity and Wyatt Bertolone from Player Profiler, DLF, and Fantasy Alarm. Let's hop back into it, and we will pick up our conversation by talking about the Seattle Seahawks. There is some news that happened, if you guys have been following out there on the social media streets. No more tight end Noah Fant. He is no longer going to be part of the equation here in Seattle. So that's already a big change. Cooper Kupp is in town. There's a whole new group of people that are going to be catching passes from a new quarterback. Sam Darnold taking over for Geno Smith. A lot of different things to work through, a lot of different things that we have to kind of weigh and factor. And I know, Jeff, this is something that you were pretty excited to, you know, talk about. So in a post-Noah Fant world, how are we feeling about trying to just parse through what to make of this offense? Because it was already confusing for all of those reasons that I highlighted. There are a lot of new names. What are we supposed to make of this?
So when the Seahawks signed Cooper Kupp, I wondered what the idea was, because both Cooper Kupp and JSN are short area targets. They have an ADOT under 10, especially Cooper Kupp last year, where he turned more into just a volume merchant more so than a downfield guy. There are some folks that do want to throw Cooper Kupp on the scrap heap of history because he did have three bad games to end the year. But before that, he averaged 10 targets, 7 catches, and 73 yards. And the Rams were scoring an extra touchdown per game in those contests. Those three games also came where they were ground and pound. They scored an average of 15 points per game in those three contests. They were running the ball. There was that monsoon Thursday night football 49ers game. So I'm bullish on Cooper Kupp as a volume monster, but my real question, and this is what gets into the Noah Fant of it all, was you've got JSN, you've got Cooper Kupp, they have the sub 10 ADOT, right? You've got MVS, he goes over the top. Well, last year, Sam Darnold threw the ball between over 10 yards 45% of the time, which was like top 10 in the NFL last year. He was throwing the ball downfield. That was probably a product of Kevin O'Connell, but if you look at Geno Smith, he was doing about 40% of the time. So my question was like, who's filling that intermediate range? Because they don't have a receiver to do that. But what they do have is a rookie tight end in Elijah Arroyo. Right? Elijah Arroyo was my third ranked tight end going into the draft. He's my third ranked tight end coming out of the draft. I don't know if he's going to have a lot of fantasy viability just because I am very bearish on rookie tight ends. Brock Bowers proved me wrong. Sam Laporta proved me wrong. But if you're in round 20 in a draft, I would take a shot on Elijah Arroyo. He is a seam merchant. He's a lot like Kyle Pitts coming out, less athletic because it's hard to be as athletic as Kyle Pitts. But if we remember rookie year, Kyle Pitts still had 1,000 yards. He wasn't a bust yet. So I'm really bullish on Elijah Arroyo as like like I got him in Scott Fishbowl. I think he's a good best ball player, because when he breaks, he's going to be getting 35 yard touchdowns, stuff like that, because he's going to catch the ball and he's going to go. So I think that there's an opportunity in this intermediate range for Elijah Arroyo to feast with Noah Fant now gone. Now, where does Noah Fant end up? I don't think it particularly matters. He's never lived up to his draft stock. He was Kyle Pitts before Kyle Pitts. Athletic freak, never really did anything with it. So that's what I wanted to talk about with the Seahawks. It was more who's playing in that intermediate game. And I think that getting rid of Noah Fant when they really didn't need to tells me that they believe a lot in Elijah Arroyo.
Yeah, no, for sure. And before I hand it over to Wyatt, you know, I always like to bring up to the listeners, you know, Herms goes to the Senior Bowl sometimes. And one of the most exciting players that was there this past cycle was Elijah Arroyo. Just being down there on the field level, seeing how big this man is. Just physically very imposing, but fast. And he has really solid hands. He was easily one of my favorite players that I watched down in Mobile this past winter. So love this call out. Wyatt, are you a fan of Elijah Arroyo? Is there perhaps a different player within this Seattle offense that you're particularly stoked about for this role? And just more generally speaking, what are we making of this offense in a Sam Darnold universe?
Yeah, this is, I think, one of the more interesting offenses to try and analyze coming into the season, and one that I'm going to be watching very intently as the preseason starts, and we can see what kind of personnel they even have out there, because it's an interesting thing that they're building here with the players that they decided to bring in based on what they already had. Cooper Kupp, I do think, is a little bit of a duplicate of JSN in terms of what they've been doing, but I also think JSN can do more downfield. He just has to be trusted with doing it in the offense. Just last year, obviously, this is going to be a little bit of a small sample size because we're only working with 19 targets that this is based off of. But just on deep targets, he had a yards per out run of 3.4, which is pretty darn good. So he's capable of working downfield. It's just a matter of he's going to in the offense, which honestly, I think they kind of have to have him do some of that if they think that Cooper Kupp is going to be a big part of their offense, because at this point, I don't think Cooper Kupp can do anything other than work close to the line of scrimmage. Frankly, I don't think much of Cooper Kupp at this point. We know that the Rams were looking to trade him during the season until they kind of won a few games and then decided to keep the band together and try and make a run. And then as soon as the season was over, the Rams were like, all right, who wants Cooper Kupp? And that was kind of enough for me, because I think the Rams are one of the better teams in the entire NFL about diagnosing talent, whether that's free agency or the draft, just in general. I think they're a really good team at, you know, looking at talent and knowing when it's time to move in or move out on somebody. But Elijah Arroyo, because of this, I think has this really unique opportunity in front of him now, because the Seahawks compared him to having the traits of an X wide receiver directly after the draft, which like, do I think Elijah Arroyo is going to play X wide receiver in the NFL? No, I really don't. But it just speaks to the type of talent he has as a pass catcher out there. They can run real routes, you know, out there, which not all tight ends can do. A lot of tight ends are kind of like short stuff where it's just like hooks and curls and outs and then up the seam, you know, that kind of thing. And that's basically it. If Elijah Rowe can actually run real routes, he can get open for Sam Darnold and be a big piece, especially when we talk about like these pieces and how they fit together and where they might run. There is opening on the field. Like MVS, all he does is run deep, you know. Torrey Horton, I imagine he's going to be doing something similar to MVS. Like, I bet like that they're competing with each other.
Yeah.
Cooper Kupp near the line of scrimmage. Who's working that intermediate? Is it JSN? I imagine so, but there's still plenty of room in that intermediate area of the field for another player, because that's a pretty big area of the field, especially across the middle of the field. That could be Elijah Arroyo. So obviously with Fant leaving now, his price is going to rise, and we have to weigh in and examine where that price gets to and what becomes comfortable. He's not going to be, you know, your normal standard one QB redraft league. He's probably just not on our radar, other than I'm going to pay attention to him as the season starts, and maybe he's someone I'm looking to pick up out of free agency. But when we're talking about these best ball drafts where we're drafting 18 rounds, he's someone who's very much on my radar, and it's really just, how high is he going to get where he gets to a point where I say, I don't want any more Elijah Arroyo? But he's a talented pass catcher. He's highly athletic. There could be something there for us.
No, definitely. All very important things to consider. Now, in our part one, I gave Wyatt a chance to talk about his team in his neck of the woods. So it would only be fair to let Jeff do the same thing for his crew. I know that you are a big San Francisco 49ers fan, and one of the things that Tyler and I typically talk about on this show is the wide receivers. There is just a lot of stuff to dig into there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you've been listening to the show, you're probably familiar with how I feel about it. So I'm going to stop and I'm going to hand it over to Jeff. What do we make of these receivers in San Francisco?
So when Herms pitched this, he said, what questions do we have? My question is, which 49ers wide receiver shows up to camp first? You got Ricky Pearsall starting on PUP with a hamstring injury. You've got Juwan Jennings holding in for a new contract, which I don't besmirch him. I feel like the Rashad Bateman contract is a floor for Juwan Jennings. He far outplayed the contract he got last offseason. And then you have Brandon Ayuk. I don't think we see Brandon Ayuk. I think he probably starts the season on PUP given how late in the year his injury was. But when the 49ers started training camp, their three wide receivers were DeMarcus Robinson, Jordan Watkins, and Jacob Cowing. It's not exactly what you're looking for. So I think whichever one of these wide receivers shows up first and shows up healthy does have a chance to take command of that high volume role for the 49ers, because Kyle Shanahan does have to change what he's doing. So much of what he did with the 49ers was predicated on having Deebo Samuel. So if you go back to how he started with the 49ers, he did have a high volume possession receiver in Pierre Garçon. Pierre Garçon was just, he was a PPR monster back with the 49ers then. Then last year you saw the Juwan Jennings breakout. You saw it against the Rams. That one ended up where he finished that game with 11 catches, 175 yards, and 3 touchdowns. So really kicking the door down. He ended up playing over 55% of snaps 11 times last year. He averaged 8 targets, 5.5 catches, and 72.7 yards. If you take out that big game, which some people wanted to do, shout out Jeff Bell posting that tweet today. I saw that. He was still on a 1,054 yard, 5 touchdown pace. I also say you can't take that game out because it still happened. But you look at Ricky Pearsall, who started last year, strangely, to put it mildly, victim of a robbery and a gunshot wound. But he had 2 starts at the end of the year, Detroit and Arizona, where he finished with 8 catches for 141 yards and a touchdown, and 6 catches for 69 yards and a touchdown. So whoever comes into camp first is going to be an incredible value, because I think that whoever comes into camp first is going to get the first crack. Kyle Shanahan has almost no loyalty. If you're loyal to him, he'll be loyal to you, unless you're Jimmy Garoppolo. And so you look at the ADP of these guys, they're going back-to-back rounds, basically. Juwan Jennings, 92.2 on FTN, and Ricky Pearsall, 102.4. So 9 and 10 rounds in 10-team leagues. And I think whoever wins this battle has a chance to be a dominant fantasy option for you. I'm talking a top 24 guy. The only question is, who shows up first? Personally, I think it's Jennings. I think they get the deal done. They have the money. They need him. They're going to go 3 days into camp and go, oh my God, we can't do this. And then they'll give him his Rashad Bateman money. So I am bullish on Jennings in this one. Pearsall does have talent. I think that they drafted Pearsall not understanding what Juwan Jennings could do. And they do similar things, with Pearsall having more yak ability, but Juwan Jennings having sturdier hands. So personally, I think that whoever shows up to camp first is going to be the one that you want to draft, because they will be the wide receiver one for the 49ers.
I mean, sometimes showing up is just half the battle, folks. Sometimes you just have to be around to, you know, get recognition, to get into the action sometimes. And that's really what some of these guys are going to have going for them. Wyatt, your thoughts on the San Francisco pass catchers?
Yeah, so first off, I'm kind of just out on Brandon Ayuk. I'm not sure when we see him. And when we do, I'm not confident in the performance that we're going to get. You're not going to feel comfortable putting him in your lineup, even once he returns. It's a complicated knee injury. This could be something where we just don't see normal Brandon Ayuk for this year. And that worries me, because his cost is still at a point in which you have to count on him when you draft him. So I can't get excited about Brandon Ayuk currently. And then we're talking about Juwan Jennings and Ricky Pearsall, which I think is a real conversation, but I've been leaning Juwan Jennings between those two. What he did last year was legit good. He was 11th in yards per out run at the position. Like, that is no fluke when you do something like that over the period of time. We're not even talking about a small sample. You know, this was essentially a full season. And after Brandon Ayuk went down, he kind of took over Brandon Ayuk's position as playing that X wide receiver in the Shanahan offense, which is a very important part of the offense. It relies on someone being able to win outside reliably and being able to beat the cornerback deep off of play action, things like that. So I think that's just because of how important of a position is in the offense and how well he played last year, which honestly, everybody, like, it's not just 2024. It started in the playoffs of 2023. Mm-hmm. Look back at that. He really started to become a big part of the offense. That's where the third and Juwan started to really get started. Mm-hmm. That nickname. So it's kind of been going on longer than people realize. So I'm really I'm thinking he's going to be that number one wide receiver for them this season. Just overall, I do have some excitement for Ricky Pearsall. He's a highly athletic wide receiver. He has like one of the lowest three cone times in like the history of the combine. Like, he's very shifty. For him, it's just gonna be a matter of like how much of those like manufactured touches in mm-hmm. that exist in the offense go to him, especially with a healthy CMC, presumably. I'm not sure how many of those he gets. And, you know, with all of that said, George Kittle's really the one you should be drafting if you're going to draft this, a pass catcher out of this offense, to me. I think he's, you know, he's the number one tight end PPR points per game last year. Don't see why he couldn't do it again this year, especially with all this confusion amongst the wide receivers. Why not just take the tight end who's been completely dominant year in and year out?
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, the obvious answer is sometimes the best answer. And it's a similar conclusion that Tyler and I came to when we were kind of talking about the Juwan Jennings situation a little bit last week. You know, currently you can get George Kittle at the 405 as the tight end 3 in our ADP. I would be comfortable, honestly, taking him at some point in the third round. I don't even think that would be too much of a reach. Like, of all these weird things that are happening, he is the constant, and he's one that he earns the targets in this offense. The San Francisco 49ers clearly like George Kittle, even if they're not really sure about everything else. So, you know, that might just be the thing that gets lost in this conversation the whole time. It might just be the answer is George Kittle, you know?
So, yeah, sometimes the best one is always right in front of you. And that's kind of how Kyle Shanahan does do it sometimes, where he's like, all right, we're going to ruin he talks about, we're going to ruin this guy's day. And that's how he builds the game plan. And a lot of times that's a linebacker. And a lot of times that means a lot of George Kittle, or when he was fully healthy, a lot of Christian McCaffrey. So Kyle Shanahan builds his game plan around, we're going to ruin this guy's day, and then we build from there. So it could just be as simple as George Kittle, which I would love to draft George Kittle, but David Njoku's in the same tier for me and is going like 6 rounds later. So I'm getting no George Kittle. It's a lot of David Njoku.
All very important stuff to consider in San Francisco for sure. Now, we have to take a quick break, but on the other side, we will talk all about one of the league's most exciting rookies. Don't go anywhere. We are back for one more topic go-around here on the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. It's your boy Herms. It's Jeff. It's Wyatt. We're talking about Travis Hunter, football player extraordinaire down there for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't know about y'all, but he's probably one of the best football prospects I've ever seen in my entire mm-hmm. life. He is super impressive. I am stoked to see him play both sides of the ball if he can pull it off. But for a lot of us, unless you play in an IDP league, we're only going to be getting some of those offensive points, what he puts up as a wide receiver. So, Jeff, what do you make of Travis Hunter and certain expectations for him in 2025? Because he's largely, you know, we haven't seen a lot of precedent for this type of player unless we go back to the days of leather helmets and everything being filmed in black and white.
Yeah, you know, when you look at depth charts in college, you occasionally get the offensive weapon designation for players. Travis Hunter is just weapon, wide receiver, cornerback. I mean, that's what he was in college. That's why he won the Heisman. He is one of the most versatile athletes that's going to be on an NFL field. I mean, this side of Taysom Hill. Pause for laughter. All right. So the reason I wanted to talk about Travis Hunter is Travis Hunter, the wide receiver, has incredible upside. He reminded me of a little bit of Stephon Diggs, a little bit of Malik Nabers coming out. Excellent body control, great hands. Not the toughest wide receiver to bring down, but he is tough to get your hands on. He's a very wiggly receiver. And that's why I wanted to talk about Travis Hunter, is because I wanted to highlight that. Because I think what's baking in is what if he plays more cornerback than wide receiver? I think that's why he's wide receiver 29. Because he is a high-end prospect. He is going into an offense that produced incredible wide receiver numbers last year with Mike Evans and the combination of Chris Godwin and Jalen McMillan, with Liam Cohen coming into Jacksonville. I think that all of that combined with Brian Thomas was going to give Trevor Lawrence a huge step up. And this is going to be a very potent passing game. And I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot more wide receiver Travis Hunter than cornerback Travis Hunter. That's what the reports out of Jacksonville seem to be, where he is primarily going to be a wide receiver and he's going to be rotated in at corner. I think that's probably where he's going to be the most effective in the NFL, especially because if the Jags take him off the field, there's a huge downgrade from Travis Hunter to Deami Brown. I mean, you look at the wide receiver 3 there, it's a huge step down. So they traded up to 2 to get him for a reason. Everything is indicating that he is going to be primarily a wide receiver with a little bit of cornerback, have a little fun, kind of the inverse Deion Sanders, who would sometimes play wide receiver. And you find that he's going at wide receiver 29. And I feel like that is way too low for him. He's going behind George Pickens. He has more upside than George Pickens. He's going behind Xavier Worthy, who I'm not a big Xavier Worthy head. But I feel like with Travis Hunter at wide receiver 29, if you buy him, you're buying the price that the market has built in because of fear. And if you don't have fear about him, which I don't, he's closer to the Cortland Sutton, DK Metcalf, wide receiver 22, 23. And that may seem like a small difference, but that's the difference in a two wide receiver league between a guy that you start every week and a guy that's a flex option. And that's kind of like the floor for him, I feel like, is that he can take over the game. God forbid Brian Thomas gets hurt. And he's the wide receiver one there. I feel like the market is building in a lot of fear about Travis Hunter that I personally don't have. And if anybody is fearful of the Travis Hunter usage, come with me. Just come with me. We'll be okay. Go get Travis Hunter. That's what I wanted to talk about. And that's not really a training camp storyline, but I guess the training camp storyline would be, how are they using Travis Hunter? Personally, I think it's going to be wide receiver.
Well, I guess, Wyatt, the only question I can really ask you in this circumstance is, are you scared? Are you scared about the Travis Hunter thing, or are you on board with this as well?
I'm not scared. When talking about Travis Hunter, hyperbole is warranted because he is a unicorn. We just haven't seen that in modern day football, what he can do. And you keep hearing out of everybody who's ever been around him, he does not get tired. And I think he can go both ways. I think he can play on both sides of the ball effectively. I do think that the Jaguars are going to be playing at wide receiver a lot to start and rotating him in at corner. And then I don't actually care how many snaps he plays at corner, because I don't think it's going to affect what he does on offense personally. The question for me is, will he ever approach Brian Thomas's target share in the offense? And does that matter? Because I think Brian Thomas, pretty clearly asserted himself as an alpha in the league as a rookie, and one of the best rookie wide receiver seasons we've ever seen. So once a player does that, I kind of always think, well, that player is going to get theirs. And then what's left after that? I do think that Travis Hunter is going to have a high targets per route run whenever he's out there. I do think he's going to be a big part of the offense. It's just a matter of, does it all come together? And is that enough for Travis Hunter as wide receiver 2 in the offense at his cost, which I think his cost is appropriate for me personally because of that. Because I think there's a lot of moving parts that go into it. But also, I think that Jeff is correct in that a lot of fear is baked into his current cost. Because if the Jaguars came out tomorrow and said, Travis Hunter's going to run 90% of the routes, he'd be wide receiver 20 in ADP, mm-hmm. Pretty easily. And that's a very real possibility. I think the training camp storyline here is watching what they're actually doing as they head into preseason and how they're utilizing them. Because I'm not saying that as in, I think that's what we can predict for game day, how they use him in preseason. I say that as in, I don't think they'll use him anywhere close to what they actually plan to use him in the regular season, what they do in the preseason. So if we, in the preseason, we see him get a handful of targets and then a few snaps at corner, I think we're off to the moon, because that means they don't have fears and they're just getting him in the process of it. So I am intently watching what he does this preseason to really see if I want to get back in on this cost heavy. Cause right now I'm just staying at the market with him.
And to your point real quick, Wyatt, I think that training camp is where you can find this out. Who's he running drills with? What side of the ball is he on 11-on-11? It's a really easy answer to, is he primarily doing wide receiver things, or is he primarily doing cornerback things? Or is he split 50-50, in which case then I'm going to be closer to market. But they can't hide, what they're doing, because they're trying to get ready for the season. So this obfuscation of, is he going to do this? Is he going to do that? Well, what are they prepping him to do? And that's really what the training camp storyline is going to be with Travis Hunter. What are they prepping him to do primarily? If it's wide receiver, I think we're off to the races.
So many different things to consider, so many topics that we were able to get into, but unfortunately, we are out of time for this episode of the Crossing Routes podcast. Thank you both so much for filling in together with our good friend Tyler O this week. So Jeff, I'll start with you. If there's anything you want to plug so that our audience can keep following you, keep seeing the things that you're up to, let us know.
Footballabsurdity.com. Just started putting out my sleepers, breakers, and breakouts and busts, doing two a day until the Tuesday before the first game of the preseason. Football Absurdity podcast everywhere but Spotify, because they don't like us for some reason. And jeffcrisco.bsky.social over on Blue Sky. That's where you can find me.
Absolutely. Sounds very good. And Mr. Wyatt, how about yourself? Let everybody know where they can find you on the internet as well.
First, thank you for having me. I hope Jeff and I were able to fill in enough for Tyler O, the rankings king, Tyler himself. You can follow me on Twitter at YP_FF if you want to support any of my work. I have a link on my profile there that will take you to everything that I do. Appreciate you.
And with that, we have reached the end of our episodes for this week. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Thank you again to Jeff and Wyatt for joining me. And until next time, this has been the Crossing Routes podcast. Adios.
Think of better before we go, just to say goodbye. And staying up and sleeping late.